is the Gremium Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Gremium Report with your host, Mike Evans.
And live from the dark heart of the Appalachian Mountains, my friends, welcome to another week of weirdness. It is the Gremium Report podcast with your weekly host, with the ghost, the weird, the wild, the wonderful. Always glad to bring it to you, Mr. Micah Hanks. Isn't that right?
That is correct.
Boy, I tell you, I love being busy like I am, and I tend to be so busy these days that I can hardly keep my head on straight. But the man across from me here, Mr. Chris Hayes, the producer, he always knows what's best. You might as well be my mom.
Well, I don't know that I would want to, you know, assume that mantle of responsibility, but I do know what's best.
You do seem to know what's best, typically.
You feeling down? Let's get a libation.
Let's get a libation in our system. You know what? I tell you, my libation is one that walks on two legs. The Reverend with the kind eyes, Mr. Matt Oakley, who's always pushing all the right buttons here in studio with us. Matthew Oakley, how are you?
I am absolutely wonderful.
And I just want to say, Micah, punctuation is key, because the way you just said that made it sound like Matt is your libation on two legs.
People out there probably wonder, what are these guys talking about? But that's okay. Welcome to the program. It is the Gremium Report. I'm your host, Micah Hanks. Oh, Lord. You know, I was on the Conspiranormal podcast last night out of Nashville, Tennessee. I was on the Conspiranormal podcast.
What a mouthful.
I told him, I said, that's a great name for a podcast. Wish I'd thought of it first. Oh! And I said, you know, that's such a good name for a podcast. And they asked me, they said, how are the Hadals doing down there in the Hollow Earth? Well, they're doing fantastic. They're just as dandy as a daisy, you know, like they tend to be. Those wonderful little Hollow Earth dwellers.
Well, we finally come to an understanding, the Hadals and I. They now realize that I was not, in fact, you know, turning their children into chips, that I was just growing really good potatoes, because that's the optimum climate down in the Moho. You know, sometimes gossip spreads.
And
tiny wars start, but tiny wars with tiny armies full of tiny Hadals can add up to a lot of tiny cuts on my person.
I guess it can.
And so I had to sit down and say, look, guys, these are actual potatoes. They're not related to you. I mean, you may have evolved from them, but they're not related to you currently. Just eat them and you'll see.
You know, in a political year, I 4 years ago would have thought, my gosh, you know, this podcast would be focusing so much on real world events. But I'm not so sure that, like, American politics actually constitutes real world events any more than the goings on down here in the Mohorovic discontinuity. Yes, indeed. We talk about the stuff that matters here on the Gremium Report, while the rest of the world wonders, well, what the hell it is actually that those guys are talking about. And I'll tell you exactly what we're talking about. Interstellar communication, or the lack thereof. Yes, indeed, the ongoing attempts at search for extraterrestrial intelligence, unfortunately, have continued to yield less than desirable results. BBC News reported this week, have you seen this, guys? No signal from targeted ET hunt. Apparently, we are continuing our attempts at trying to communicate utilizing radio cosmology for purposes of finding intelligent species that may be like ourselves elsewhere out there in space. And nonetheless, the hunt for intelligent civilizations employs from time to time new techniques. You know, laser technology and different kinds of radio telescopic methods and these sorts of things. Despite this, nonetheless, we have yet to find proof of extraterrestrial intelligence utilizing such techniques. Australian astronomers. I can't talk tonight. You ever get one of those nights where, like, the altitude down here, or the lack thereof, is it a negative kind of an altitude? You know, if you call the lack of entropy negentropy, then you would call this naltitude, right? So our naltitude beneath the Earth right now.
I think there's a word for that also. It's called depth.
It's called below sea level. Well, anyway, yeah, we're way down, and it affects my psyche sometimes, so bear with me, folks. Yes, Australian astronomers, that's a bit of a tongue twister there, have used very long baseline interferometry to examine, okay, a star, Gliese 581, a star known to host planets in what we call the habitable zone. In other words, we're looking for planets that may be conducive to circumstances like what we have here on Earth, that thereby may also be conducive to, well, Earth-like life. Life similar to that as we know it here on this planet. The hunt for aliens is fundamentally a vast numbers game, and so the team's results should come as no surprise. Yes, you probably have already managed to discern, just as we have, that no, we haven't managed to reach alien life. There was a report posted online about this. It'll be published later this month in the Astronomical Journal. Now, in recent years, interest in such targeted searches has begun to surge as the hunt for planets outside the solar system continues to find them at every turn. And yet, astronomers currently estimate that every star in the night sky hosts on average 1.6 planets, implying that there are billions and billions of planets out there yet to be confirmed. Who knows what kinds of life might exist way out there in the universe, and how many planets may be host to life like this. But, you know, here's the thing about this. Despite the fact that recent attempts at contacting, or at least finding evidence of intelligent life on planets such as this Gliese 581 star, despite the fact that we haven't found life, there are a few things I think that we have to take into consideration when it comes to the use of, SETI, okay, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence as we know it. The point is that when we look at the potential for there being life existing elsewhere in the cosmos, okay, we often point out that we shouldn't be sending messages to intelligent species for the simple reason that they may indeed be dangerous. If these potentially intelligent extraterrestrial races similar to ourselves are out there, and if they're looking for other intelligent life in the universe like ourselves, and they happen to get a message from, let's say, Earthlings, what's to say that they're not going to go, you know, literally go down there to Earth and you know, ransack the place and steal all our resources, you know, and take over the planet and become interstellar squatters that take a colonialist attitude here and literally park themselves here on planet Earth, whether or not that benefits the life already innate to the planet. This is something that has worried a lot of people, and no less among them, of course, Stephen Hawking. And because of that, astronomers have often warned that it's probably not a good idea for us to send messages to E.T., but it's okay to look for messages from E.T. Well, if there were intelligent life like us out there, here's what I would argue. First of all, what's to say that these intelligent aliens wouldn't be just as apprehensive, and that they would be, you know, careful about who and how they would, first of all, who they would potentially be engaging in interplanetary communication with, and also how they go about doing that. You know, if we're not going to send messages because we're apprehensive about how aliens might be and how they might treat us, well, who's to say that aliens wouldn't act the same way?
So are you saying possible ET contacts, like entire races and civilizations, could just be self-conscious and have a low body image?
A low body image? You mean
like,
a low...
Like, what if we go to Earth and they think we're fat, or they don't like our third eye?
When you say low body image, I mean, are we talking about, like a low self-esteem?
Self-esteem. They've got pretty girl syndrome. Like, they know they're pretty, but they have to be told. Otherwise, they don't know they're pretty.
Well, maybe that's the case. But again, I think that in terms of existential concerns, the lingering threat of an unknown intelligence like, for instance, let's use ourselves as an example here. If human beings on Earth are looking for life like ourselves, there is a potential existential threat that emanates from the discovery of life like ours that may be more advanced and thus more well-equipped with intelligence and technology and perhaps even weaponization that could be utilized against us that would be, of course, conducive to their own survival. Let's say that there were an intelligent alien species somewhere out there in space, and they seek to come and find a planet like Earth that is inhabited by lesser intelligent beings, or beings that maybe have the capacity for intelligence similar to their own, but that are less advanced and less as, you know, not quite as far along the path toward that advancement that they are. Of course, we would be at a disadvantage if we were visited by such aliens, and thereby, if these aliens were seeking such things as resources, you know, the likes of which may be found naturally here on planet Earth, well, we could be in danger. Now, Hawking and others have argued this for years. We talked recently on the program about I believe a retiring SETI astronomer who had said, you know, in all likelihood that wouldn't be the case. A so highly advanced a species would likely not have a necessity for finding the sorts of resources that are so, you know, so integral to our own potential, you know, exploration of space as humans, because we're not that far along, okay? At least not as far along as we would presume that an alien intelligence capable of reaching planet Earth, being able to traverse the great distances between, you know, ourselves and, of course, the known planets that may inhabit or may be inhabited by life. You know, we're talking light years. We're talking about a tremendous distance. And frankly, to be able to make that distance as humans, it would exceed the lifespan of living beings that we know today. And unless we find ways to live much longer, or we find ways that we can send people into space who can procreate and they can raise their progeny up so as to continue that mission, and we spend decade after decade after decade in space for the ultimate purpose of colonization, you know, it's one of two scenarios at present, given the technological limitations that we have right now. And therefore, it's going to be very difficult to reach a star that may be a star or a star system, rather, that may have planets that are inhabited by life like us. Now, that said, if indeed there are aliens at least somewhat like us, but probably far more advanced, that are already visiting Earth, many would argue that they wouldn't have the kind of necessity for those resources, and therefore they wouldn't indeed be coming here looking to harm us. They would be coming looking merely for indeed life, and that seems to be what we do. We're fairly altruistic about it at present, so much so that we're concerned about that potential elsewhere in the universe. But who's to say that, again, aliens elsewhere out there aren't the same way, and that they wouldn't be worried about the same sorts of things? And therefore, this great silence that we have could be the result of all these different alien intelligences out there throughout the universe that are literally just too apprehensive about the idea of initiating contact for purposes of protecting themselves. Until we know that we can withstand a potential threat, we're not going to advertise. We don't do that here, and perhaps aliens out there elsewhere don't either.
Well, I feel like the answer really is simple, and a lot of people aren't bringing it up merely because I think they think it's science fiction. But it may be we haven't heard anything from any extraterrestrial sources because of the Prime Directive, which no, in all seriousness, states any person or civilization in, you know, the Galactic Federation, whatever, if there is a federation, should not contact or mess with any other civilization that hasn't achieved light speed travel or faster than light travel,
right?
In order to, you know, avoid influencing the evolution of the species in an unnatural way.
You know, it's funny. I didn't know about the Prime Directive until recently, and of course it came out in a conversation with Scotty Roberts, whom I hope may be able to join us a little bit later on the program tonight, just for purposes of bringing an update, because, you know, we've been making leaps and bounds with Paradigm Symposium lately. And as a matter of fact, if you go to GrayleanReport.com right now, we have a video linked to the website right now, just kind of a little promotional thing that we're doing for Paradigm Symposium. I can guarantee you there will be more in the coming weeks, but we have been selling so many tickets. I've got to just tell you, we've actually sold out of the first block of hotel rooms. Okay, this is true. The first block of hotel rooms that were given to us by the DoubleTree Hilton, where we're holding the event. All this is on the website. Just check out, you know, ParadigmSymposium.com. It's all right there at the website. But the first block of discounted hotel rooms for attendees have already sold out, and we've had to set aside another block of hotel rooms for people hoping to stay there at the hotel when they attend the event. That's how quickly these tickets are selling. And I kid you not, they're really, really picking up. As the summer months are coming in, I guess people have more money, and also the word's getting further and further out there, and more people are learning about Paradigm Symposium. In fact, I should go ahead and drop a quick Easter egg. Next week on the program, we are going to have a guest who's joining us very briefly on the program to discuss Paradigm Symposium. And I'll tell you this, it is one of our speakers. This is probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest speaker at Paradigm Symposium. You won't hear this guy anywhere else except for maybe on Coast to Coast AM and on this podcast. That's how big this is. I'm not even going to tell you who it is. You can probably, if you've already been following this show and Paradigm Symposium, and you know what we're about and what we're doing, you probably already have an idea who I'm talking about. I want to go ahead and just tease it. This is really going to be big, and next week we're going to have this very special guest on the program talking about Paradigm Symposium with us. Big things to come in the future, and if you haven't got your tickets yet, definitely check out www.paradigmsymposium.com. Get your tickets today, because this is not going to be an event you want to miss. When we come back from this break, my friends, we're going to be touching a little bit on, well, we're going to touch on a number of different news items, but something that's been on everybody's mind is this alleged zombie apocalypse. Is there really a zombie apocalypse? Is there such a thing? Could there be such a thing? What does the Center for Disease Control have to think about this? Well, we'll touch on that when we come back. I'm Micah Hanks, my friends. It is the Graylian Report. For most of us, chocolate is a guilty pleasure. Come on, admit it. You've got a sweet tooth just like the rest of us. But if I told you that eating chocolate was actually really good for your health and happiness, you'd probably say I was in La La Land. Hey, I wouldn't argue. Here's why. Every batch of the fine handcrafted chocolates at La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate is made from scratch, using organic, fair trade, and 100% natural ingredients. From the first bite, you'll know you're enjoying true quality, and the heart shape isn't the only way you'll feel the love. In fact, every chocolate from La La Land Organics is made by Melody Dawn Germain herself, and according to her own special recipe. Be sure and visit Melody's website at www.mdgnewmedia.com. That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. Just click chocolate in the toolbar at the top of the page. You can't miss it. And while you're there, you can see a full list of the ingredients that will be sure to put a smile on your face. And I promise, it's guilt-free. La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate. Why wait? That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. We're your light in the darkness, your home for right and reason in an unreasonable world. Welcome back to the program. It is the Graylian Report. I'm your host, Micah Hanks. Thank you so much for joining us every week on this program. Cosmic love to all of you, babies. You know, I get asked so much these days about cosmic love. What is all that about, man? Are you in love? Are you enlightened? What is it? I think maybe it's a combination of the two. I'm in love with life and other things. I think that also there is no such thing as enlightenment as we know it. I think that going through this life is a constant process. Actually, to quote Bruce Lee, the martial artist, of course, who was also a brilliant philosopher, it is a process of becoming that we're all undergoing. And as soon as we ever claim that we have learned all that there is to learn, we stop growing. And therefore, I hope in this life I never learn everything, because then I would stop growing. I want to continue to grow, and I want to continue to learn and to better myself as I go along. And that process, that continuance, that unending progression toward betterment, that is cosmic love, my friends. Welcome back to the program. It is the Graylian Report. So glad to be your host, the mouth of the South, Micah Hanks, for another week of weirdness. And speaking of weirdness, guys, have you seen this one about mysterious radiation bursts that were recorded in tree ring data? This is something that has fascinated me for a number of years. You remember the big Climate Gate scandal that came out years and years ago, in which, of course, Phil Jones and a number of the people at East Anglia University were caught red-handed fabricating certain bits and pieces of information with regard to global warming. Okay? Now, I'm not saying, I don't know. Look, I don't profess to know, but I do know that whether or not you buy the idea of there being global warming or not, I do know that there is certainly a political agenda that tries to utilize global warming science either for or against certain activities and individuals and organizations and all this stuff. It's politicized for the betterment of some and not for others. And that's a sad thing, because when our planet and when our nature and the sciences that are used to understand the nature and the physical laws that govern our universe, when those things become objects of vitriol and they're used as weapons against political parties and groups, okay, who are vying for power on a global and a geopolitical basis, that's a pretty sick thing. And yet we deal with that constantly. I think that's why Alex Jones spent the last several days standing out there. What was it he was talking about up there at the Bilderberg meeting? Gold-coated babies. What were you talking about?
Yeah, he was saying he had a megaphone, and he was out there leading some protest, and he was saying, these Bilderbergers are eating babies covered in golden foil roasted over an open flame. And I can't do the scream because I don't think he screamed, so I don't want to mimic a scream that never happened. But he was very adamant that these Bilderbergers were eating babies roasted over open flames covered in gold foil.
It's so funny because, I mentioned that I was on the Conspiranormal podcast as a guest just last night, and and they were talking about the great soundbite-worthy quotes that come from Alex Jones, and I said, man, you want to hear a better soundbite-worthy individual? Fred Phelps of Westboro Baptist Church, okay, out west over there, you know, those guys, you know, God hates this, God hates that. You know, I did a segment back when I was on DCIX.FM. The Micah Hanks radio program. I did a segment about Westboro Baptist Church and what those lunatics are out there saying. You know, they're the guys that show up at all the military funerals picketing, you know, with their signs just saying hatred, you know, really, truly hateful vitriol. And I gathered a bunch of beautiful quotes from Fred Phelps, and one of them was, they're going to make you eat your babies! And it's so funny because I thought, you know, that really beats anything that Alex Jones has said. Well, apparently until this week. You know.
Gold-covered babies, they're going to make you eat your own babies. And that's why you don't give whiskey to a god.
No, you can give whiskey to a god. Just don't too much whiskey to a god, because they're going to go to the Tet bar. They're going to run over the kids. They're going to inject them with mercury. Oh, yeah, that's too much whiskey for a god is a bad
Don't give
idea.
Whiskey to gods, yes. Thus saith Alex Jones. But anyway, all that said, the reason I bring all this up is because, again, there's overt politicization and conspiratorial thought applied to all things, even the sciences today. And this is really, unfortunately, what, despite what lies at the heart of the global warming debate, this is what we see most of in the media today. And the reason I bring this up again is because dendrochronology. Okay, dendrochronology, if I can say this word tonight, God, I'm stuttering worse than normal tonight. It must be the cosmic influence on my brain, having finished this new book that's coming out later this year, but we'll get to that a little later. Indeed, the ability to read about Earth's past and about atmospheric changes going on in the past, as recorded in tree ring data, okay, is something that is utilized not only in global warming science, but also in understanding things about Earth's history in other areas. And indeed, a recent study has found a mysterious burst of radiation that has been recorded in tree ring data of this sort that occurred apparently just over 1,200 years ago. All right? According to this study, it was about 1,200 years ago that the planet was hit by an extremely intense burst of high-energy radiation of unknown cause, according to scientists studying tree ring data. I believe, again, the word for this is dendrochronology. The radiation burst, which seems to have hit between AD 774 and AD 775, was detected by looking at the amounts of the radioactive isotope carbon-14 in the tree rings that formed during the 775 growing season in the Northern Hemisphere. The increase in carbon-14 levels is so clear, according to scientists who have studied this data, okay, that a cosmic ray physicist from Nagoya University, Japan, has concluded that the atmospheric level of carbon-14 must have jumped by 1.2% over the course of no more than just a year. Now, that may sound insignificant, folks. That's actually quite significant. And that's actually about 20 times more than the normal rate of variation. 20 times more. Something back around 774 AD was going on. The work looks pretty solid, says Daniel Baker, a space physicist at the University of Colorado's Laboratory for Atmospheric and Space Physics in Boulder, Colorado, and he says that some very energetic event clearly occurred around the time that's outlined in this study, 774 to 775 AD. But exactly what this was is nonetheless difficult to determine. Many believe that there is probably evidence for something along the lines of a supernova, which may have produced cosmic radiation. A massive supernova, for example, should have been bright enough, however, to produce a new star visible to people even in the daytime. That's how bright this thing would have been in order to produce the kind of cosmic radiation that would be associated with supernova activity in order to influence the tree ring data.
Unless the supernova was further away than they thought.
If it were further away, though, again, I would argue that it may not have had the kind of influence that is being recorded in the tree ring data.
I mean, that's... I don't want to argue with people who have educations far above my pay grade, but I actually have been looking into supernovas, and there have been several actually really nice television documentaries about what would happen if a supernova, if a star went supernova X amount of light years away from Earth.
Right.
Like, between 0 and 15 light years away from Earth, we're screwed. We're dead. We're all dead. You know, 16 to 20 to 30 light years away, bad stuff would happen. And then even further than that, we're bombarded by the remnants of billions of years old supernovas every day, constantly.
Right.
It's never ending. So I don't necessarily agree with the fact that if this happened enough to, you know, influence the tree rings, that we'd see a second sun for how long?
A second sun. You remember that enigmatic scene in a Red Pill Junkie, our good friend and correspondent here on the program, and blogger for the Daily Grail, as well as Mysterious Universe. If you're not already following Red Pill Junkie over at Mysterious Universe, you got to check out his Red Pills of the Week over there as well. So he's becoming quite prolific in the blog sphere. And I remember a few years ago he did a blog post that talked a little bit about that enigmatic scene, and I love this. It was from the first, you know, the first of the three good Star Wars films, you know, not the sucky ones. I don't even like to think that there were six Star Wars films. There were three Star Wars films, and then there were three films that were based on Star Wars that were not, they fell short of the mark.
You're not counting the Ewok Christmas special, right?
Wait, Ewok, or was it the I thought it was the Sasquatch. I mean, the Wookiee Christmas special. There was an Ewok special,
there was,
too.
And I think it was animated, and it was pretty terrible.
But do you remember that there was a Wookiee Christmas special, too? You remember?
No.
Yeah. Oh, I think there was.
I don't remember that.
I think there was.
With Chewbacca's kid.
Yeah, yeah. What was his name? Lumperawump? Didn't we talk about Lumperawump already? Lumperawump, the baby Wookiee. Oh my God! You know, I celebrate my birthday in April, and the funny thing is a lot of people don't know this probably, but my brother Caleb Hanks, who's been on the program before, he and I celebrate the same birthday, April 17th. Okay, and in the group that we perform in, Nitrograss, our banjo player Charles Wood actually got us a gift for Christmas, and he says, "I got you guys a gift, but you got to share it." And it was a guide to speaking fluent Wookiee.
Well, have you? That's like playing Klingon Boggle.
Yeah. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, anyway, I'm no more fluent at Wookiee anymore. I still only know that one word, which I think is take the trash out. Anyway, well, okay, another idea as to what may have caused this catastrophic event back around 774 AD was a solar flare. And according to one researcher, anything that could have produced the required amount of super high energy protons would have vastly exceeded the most intense solar outburst ever recorded. So we've got issues with the supernova theory, and the solar flare idea also has its shortcomings. There should have been a historical record of extraordinary auroras, okay, such as the Aurora Borealis, of course, these ghostly looking lights, especially that appear over the northern hemispheres. Not to mention that such a great, gigantic flare of this sort would probably have destroyed the ozone layer altogether, with devastating ecological consequences. So what exactly were we dealing with? What could constitute the kind of information that these dendrochronologists, okay, these tree ring data experts, are gathering? What is this? What exactly happened, okay, back around 774 to 7075? AD.
Maybe there was another ancient nuclear war.
Well, I don't know, okay? But, you know, Nick Redfern emailed me the other day, and he said, man, I tell you, in the Lost Civilizations and Secrets of the Past anthology that came out by New Page Books, you know, I've got a whole stack of them right here behind me, okay? Look, there they are! Nick Redfern said, man, your article in that about ancient nukes was absolutely incredible. And he said, I'm telling you, Micah, you need to write a book about that. Now, I personally am the kind of researcher that I will write an article about something like that, but I'm not going to buy into a faith-based belief in that just, you know, because I've written about it, and therefore, you know, if I write about it, I should believe what I've written about and thereby I can sell more books. I'm not that kind of a person. I try to be objective, and I try to be, you know, all-inclusive in terms of, you know, what data I look at. I try not to leave anything out. I try not to be discriminating, but I try to be discerning, okay? I don't know that I can endorse the idea that there were ancient nuclear weapons. I certainly think there were ancient nuclear events. And this is just one of many evidences, if you will, for indeed rather, well, dare I say, explosive events that occurred in ancient times here on planet Earth. But what was the cause of that? Were there meteorites, you know, the lights of the Tunguska event from 1908, or were there meteorites that were striking Earth or something like that and causing these huge explosions? Was it a combination of solar flares and supernova? What was going on in our ancient past that could constitute the physical evidence that we have that is indicative of incredibly intense and powerful cosmic events that occurred here on Earth in ancient times?
Well, specifically for this story, where were these trees again? Where were they located?
Where were they located? That's a good question, actually, to tell you the truth. I don't know the actual locations of the trees from which these samples were taken. But again, we're going to have this linked in the show notes at graylianreport.com, so those who are listening to the podcast can follow along and find out about this.
Well, I was thinking, you know, using scientific deduction, it would help to know where these trees came from, but barring that, I would have to say aliens.
Yes, exactly.
It was aliens.
We don't know, therefore, aliens. You know, but honestly, it's funny, Chris, I know you say that in jest, but in truth, we see a lot of that these days. When we are faced with seeming impossibilities, and we don't have any better answers, you know, in this kind of this post-theistic society in which we exist, people don't want to say that God had anything to do with this. And I'm not asserting that God, as we understand a God, you know, a supreme being to be, you know, I'm not asserting that it was the work of a God, but I certainly have no evidence to support the idea that alien beings from another world had anything to do with this. And how timely that we bring that up, because, of course, yes, this Friday, Prometheus will be in theaters. This is probably the one film all year that I'm actually very excited about seeing. Prometheus. This is going to be this film is so interesting because it not only incorporates elements of the ancient extraterrestrial visitation theory, but there are also aspects of spirituality and religion, artificial intelligence, you know, futurism, all these sorts of things, you know, kind of figure into this. And also, I think that Ridley Scott is one hell of a good director. That's why we've invited him to the Paradigm Symposium. I hope he makes it out. I hope he makes it out, because that's the whole reason we're putting on the event there in Minneapolis, to try and ask these sorts of necessary questions about ourselves and our civilization as we know it, and, of course, our beginnings. Where do we come from? I doubt it was anything quite so simple as just to say that you know, aliens came here and they started messing with monkeys. And that after messing with monkeys, well, the result was the convenient appearance of humans, Homo sapiens as we know it.
Yeah, that's so silly. Monkeys have tails. Come on.
Come on, really, right? But by the same token, though, I mean, you know, the invisible man in the sky approach to understanding God and religion, you know, it's painfully anthropomorphic, too. We interpret the Gospels, for instance. We'll actually take it even further back to the Old Testament. God made man in his image, right? But then again, is it really the physical image that we are meant to discern from that? Is there really a quote-unquote man in the sky, or is the image in which man was created that resembles God, was that not resemblant of maybe something else, something a little more esoteric than the physical anthropomorphic humanoid form? You know, the torso, two legs, two arms, and a head. I doubt sincerely that there is a man sitting on a cloud up there in the sky, and that this is what constitutes God. I think that God is probably something far less easily understood and no less enigmatic. And that's interesting because these are the sorts of themes that are dealt with in Prometheus. In fact, actually, Fox News carried a story about this week that asked, did aliens or God create the human race? And that this was, of course, a theme that is running through Prometheus. In the film, an Earth-based crew is sent on a long journey to a nearby star system to explore a planet believed to host an advanced civilization. In the film, as I understand, they are known as the Engineers. Kind of creepy, huh? The film asks not just how realistic such a premise is, but more complex questions as well. Did aliens create the human race? And if so, does that negate the existence of a god? Or did God create the aliens? Do they have to be mutually exclusive? Ridley Scott, it seems, is a believer, but in which? God or aliens? The more you go into it, the more you realize that it kind of makes sense, Scott told FoxNews.com. He said, you stand outside at night, you look at the galaxy, and you think, the fact that we think we're the only ones here is entirely ridiculous. I agree. It's an arrogance to believe that we're the only ones here. Prometheus scientist Elizabeth Shaw, played by actress Noomi Rapace, agrees. Did I pronounce her name correctly, Chris, by the way? Is it Noomi Rapace? Rapace, maybe?
No, I believe you're correct. She's Swedish.
Okay. Well, after discovering a series of mysterious symbols written inside of a cave, highly inspired by the work of, well, a guest that may be on the program very soon, a deeply religious Shaw sets out on an intergalactic quest to prove her theory that humans were actually created by some variety of alien life forms. Shaw sees no conflict between her faith in God and evidence that extraterrestrials were responsible for mankind's existence on Earth. I love that contradiction in her, to be a scientist and to be religious at the same time. The actress said, it was just like a constant war zone in her between those two sides, but I do think that it's because she chose to believe in a god, that is, and she is connected with something, her god. That's what makes her strong in the most destructive, dark, and crazy moments when everything else is falling apart. Because she has that faith, that's what makes her a survivor. It's her faith that saves her, not the science, it's not the brain, but the heart. And I find that quite beautiful, Rapace said. Scott explained that Shaw's religious faith was based in part on a dinner that he shared with 9 astrophysicists, including 3 scientists from NASA. This is interesting. He says that scientists who are believers, well, that's not really unique. Scott said, I asked, who in this room believes in God? And 4 of the 9 that he was dining with, he said, put their hands up. It's kind of odd that somebody working with such specific clarity will say, well, actually, you know, I hate to tell you, but I do believe in God. So that's an abstract thing called faith. Now, David, now this is one of the most enigmatic and interesting characters that is portrayed in the Prometheus film. Of course, David the android that is portrayed by the actor, what's his name? Michael Fassbender, right? Michael Fassbender that portrays David. Well, this character, he seems to be intrigued in the film by Shaw's faith, and at one point actually takes a cross from her that she wears. He's definitely taken a specific interest in Elizabeth, Fassbender said, of course, who portrayed David. I think he finds something very interesting in her. He's curious about her, her determination, her faith, her work ethic. He's all about gathering information. David, who Fassbender, get this, modeled after David Bowie, Peter O'Toole's T.E. Lawrence in Lawrence of Arabia, and Dirk Bogarde in The Servant, an Olympic gold medalist Greg Louganis as well. Wow, what an interesting series of models for the character. He takes away Shaw's cherished silver cross necklace, a very curious thing for an android to do. It's all about what would happen if I took this away. What sort of reaction would I get, explained Fassbender. But yes, there's a little bit of something else going on in there. Is he getting his own motivations? Is he getting some sort of pleasure out of things? Or is there just jealousy or vengeance there? Are these very sorts of, well, human traits that he's exhibiting?
Well, one thing I know from seeing any Ridley Scott movie ever is never trust the android.
You know, there's this one scene in the trailer, and I brought this up to someone earlier, and that's where we see Fassbender, and I think his finger may be pricked or something like that, and he says, big things have small beginnings, something to that, you know, extent. And yeah, it seems that David the android, David, plays a rather ominous role in this film. I'll tell you, I couldn't be more excited to see a film, probably, than Prometheus. And yes, Alex Jones has spoken out against it and calls it Illuminati tripe. I don't know that I believe that it's Illuminati tripe, but maybe it's, well, in a sense, you know, especially, and I think I'm qualified to say this, since this book that I've just finished writing, The UFO Singularity, deals not only with the potential for the existence of alien species out there, but also for artificial intelligence of our future, and also how humans and how our faith even, in a sense, relates to all this, and who we are, and who we, more importantly, perhaps, are becoming. Okay, all these things are dealt with in the book, and I thought it was just incredible that this would align. I didn't plan it like this, folks. You know, I was going to pitch a book to my publishers about, you know, just a broader view of the UFO enigma in general, and the publishers advised, let's zoom in and let's look at this transhumanist link that you draw here. So we end up doing a book about the UFO singularity, okay, and then there's Paradigm Symposium that features all these ancient cosmology experts who are speaking, and then this film Prometheus comes out. You know, we didn't plan it, but it's like incredible because all of these things are aligning in this, well, this, what many would assert is a pivotal year of 2012. I don't claim to know if there's any significance to that. Maybe the synchronicity there is only in that I perceive that there is a connection. Perhaps there isn't actually a connection, but it is rather novel to me that all these things are kind of taking place and that maybe, who knows, we are intended to learn something from it. Maybe we were intended to learn something about ourselves, and I think that's the whole intention of the ancient cosmologists and those who study ancient alien theories and the like, or spirituality or anything else. You know, we're trying to learn a little something about ourselves that maybe we don't know. And I'll tell you something else I'm trying to learn about right now is, indeed, if we are changing as a species, where are we going, and are we comfortable with where we're going and the changes that are occurring? There have been a lot of changes. In fact, some have been calling some of these more dangerous and disgusting changes in the news right now evidence of a zombie apocalypse. When we come back, we'll talk about that more on the Graylian Report.
Some fun? Maybe get a little bit of insight. Get a lay of the land. Want to know what's really going on? Do what I do. Listen to Future Theater. It airs every Saturday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the Inception Radio Network.com. We'll see you there.
On the battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by. Never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. Wounded Warrior Project was created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war, whether those scars are physical or mental. Wounded Warrior Project. We never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Learn more about what we do at WoundedWarriorProject.org.
Exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Graylian Report with your host, Mike Evans.
Would you and your family be well enough equipped in the event that a zombie apocalypse actually occurred here in the United States? Well, unfortunately, I don't think everyone has a bunker that they can hold up in and protect themselves like we do here at Graylian International. That's right, it is the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks. Welcome back to the program. The second hour of this week's edition of The Strange and the Unusual, the weekly podcast that brings it all to you and makes sense of the madness. I'm your host, the Mouth of the South, Mr. Micah Hanks, joined in studio, as always, by our engineer, Mr. Matt Oakley, and producer, Chris Hayes. And we're going to be talking, in addition to You know, I don't even want to talk about the zombie apocalypse. There is no zombie apocalypse, as we all know. It's a bit stupid and redundant even to have to say that there is no zombie apocalypse. Trust me, if anybody knows zombies, it's me and probably the guy sitting across from me here.
I would just like to mention that the views expressed by the host of the show do not necessarily reflect the views of the rest of the production staff.
Well, I'm sorry. It's absolutely absurd to me that we do have news stories that involve people eating one another, and it's tragic and it's terrifying. And yet there are people out there who seem to be treating this fairly seriously in terms of whether or not there is the actual potential for a zombie apocalypse underway right now in the United States, especially in the Southeast, in places like Miami, where we had this face-eating incident that we touched on briefly last week.
Well, like I said, you know, media propaganda aside, the man in Miami was shot multiple times. I'm still waiting to find out where the fatal shot landed. Like I said, if it was anywhere on the body, you know, like the thigh or the chest or somewhere like that, then we're cool. If it was in the head, then my bug-out bag is ready. And if you come with me, that's cool. You can survive. If not, fare thee well.
Yes, I agree with you. Fare thee well. And by the way, I want to say that, you know, we've got a post about this over at the Graylin Report titled "More Media Madness, Zombie Cannibals Attack the U.S. Mainland." And while you're there, you might just notice we've got some fantastic sponsors and affiliates that are assisting the program right now. We've got Green Alien Art, of course, the fantastic art of our latest sponsor who's come on board with the program here. Check that out, greenalienart.com. And then, of course, we've also got, get this, have you seen Abduction Wine? Abduction Wine. This is interesting. Yes, experience missing time. Boy, if the wine alone is enough to get you to experience missing time, that must be pretty stout stuff.
Yeah, I'm in. I'm in.
Right? That seems to be the case. But anyway, that said, when you're over there checking out the website, do be sure and notice these aspects, these new additions. And in addition to the new additions, pardon my redundancy, we have headlines such as homeless women who attempt to kidnap children and consume at least one child's arm. This occurred last week in Southern California. Yes, the child, thank God, was unharmed. But yes, a homeless woman actually did attempt to kidnap a child and break off the child's arm. Forgive me for even having to word it like that. I know that this is probably disturbing for many of our listeners. Then Congress, of course, in the aftermath of this occurrence, the face-eating incident down there in Miami, have considered banning these bath salts. Anybody know specifically the manner in which these bath salts are administered in order to elicit the hallucinatory experience that apparently is underlying these violent attacks?
I'm assuming if they even resemble bath salts, then they're crystalline and therefore are more than likely smoked in a glass pipe.
Or perhaps also snorted through the nasal cavity, correct?
Yeah, I mean, that could happen.
Okay. All right. Well, then, of course, we also hear this story. Well, I labeled it here at the website. Eat your heart out if you want, but don't eat your roommate's heart and brains. Yes, one man was accused of actually killing and then eating the brains and heart of his roommate. We have a man who had stabbed and grabbed, rather, at his own intestines and then tossed aspects of his own viscera at police that were attempting to capture him. There was one man, okay, in China, who had apparently tried to, and he didn't just try, he succeeded. And this wasn't some sort of a trick or some sort of a nasty game he was playing. He told everybody what he was doing, but this man was apparently a willing recipient of a gender surgery in which his genitals were removed so that he would become a she. And then, of course, he offered to serve his genitals as a fine dining experience to a number of individuals who actually, apparently, as I understand it, paid to have this experience. Boy, maybe it's just a cultural boundary there. We've got an MMA fighter, okay. We have an MMA fighter who's now standing trial for removing his sparring partner's still beating heart and a number of other crimes. Now, we're about to be joined by a fantastic guest here on the program. This guest is actually not only an expert on aspects of this phenomenon, but also he's well known as the co-host of the popular Paracast with Gene Steinberg. And the reason I've decided to bring this guest on board is because some of these crimes are absolutely so horrific. And in a book that this individual wrote a number of years ago called Stalking the Tricksters, he touched on, well, I guess what we might call Wendigo psychosis. But I'm not going to get into Wendigo psychosis myself right now. I'm going to leave it to our guest, Mr. Chris O'Brien, who joins us now on the Graylian Report. Chris, how are you tonight?
Pretty good, Micah. Sorry about the little delay in getting booted back up, but good to be on the show. Yeah, a strange subject, and really don't know what to make of it. I think maybe endemic of these so-called end times or something. I don't know. It's pretty strange.
Well, a lot of people are saying that. And again, I said right at the top of this hour, which you may not have been able to hear this, but, you know, many people have been talking about this. And the very astute Brad Steiger was even interviewed by the Huffington Post talking about, again, what I just termed as Wendigo psychosis. Now, I don't know that there really is what we would call a zombie apocalypse underway
now. I mean, that's a convenient term, obviously. Yeah.
Right. But in terms of trying to understand if there is any kind of connection between these sorts of reports. I just listed a number of them right here. I mean, we've got at least 10 or so, and I didn't even list my entire list. And then there's another one that just recently made news, this story about this fugitive cannibal porn star arrested in Berlin. Have you heard this one?
Yeah, the latest in the I didn't realize that there had been so many. You know, it reminds me, Mike, in a way, of the cattle mutilation phenomenon, which, as you know, and possibly your listeners know, I've been pretty involved with investigating for quite a number of years. And, you know, it's interesting when a single report that's notable arises in a local or regional area and the media gets involved, then all of a sudden any similar report gets lumped into it and you kind of get a snowball going down the hill culturally, I think, vis-a-vis the media. And that, to me, may be going on here. Although, if you're talking 8-10 reports of this kind, that's that's pretty notable. Don't forget we have a number of a billion people on the planet, and all sorts of weird things happen every second of every day. And it's where we put our attention, I think, as a culture that maybe kind of throws a little gasoline on the fire, especially something as salacious as two naked guys fighting and one of them eating the other guy's face. I mean, you know, give me some help here.
Well, I know what you mean. And, you know, actually,
yikes.
I'll tell you what.
That's not Wendigo. I mean, you want to talk Wendigo, that's a whole different conversation. You know, we're seeing aberrant social behavior that is a little disquieting.
I think it certainly is, and it brings to mind, actually, our colleague Lauren Coleman, you know, who's best known for his research with Sasquatch and Bigfoot, but, of course, he's also got a book that he authored a number of years ago, and of course, a blog of the same name, The Copycat Effect, where he talks about how there seems to be, that term explains it the best, a copycat effect in which a violent crime or something along those lines occurs in the media, and then we see these kind of copycat crimes that seem to occur in the days and the weeks following. And this is definitely the case right now. I mean, I've wondered sometimes if indeed it might be the case that there are violent crimes, the likes of which we're hearing about in the news all the time, and that right now, just because a couple of people and a couple of key players in news and media have chosen to grab these and to make them sensational, maybe we're just hearing about them more right now. Do you think this is the kind of thing that really is going on all the time, or are these events fairly uncommon and nonetheless appearing and occurring in a fairly localized period of time?
Well, I hate to answer this in the affirmative, but I think this stuff goes on every day. There's a lot of messed up people living in a rather messed up world. And the more you ratchet up the pressure in the culture, it's like turning the heat up on a pressure cooker. You're going to have that little knob on the top dancing around, and that steam is just building up in the culture right now. And you're going to see, I think, more and more outbursts of this type. And, you know, combine, you know, with an uncertain economic future and all this, you know, front loading of fear by the media around 2012 and you know, just a lot of a sense of hopelessness, especially in the younger people, I think. I think we're going to be seeing more of this, and I think the media is looking for validation of their programming of fear. They're looking for these things that they can point to say, see, we've been trying to get you in a place of fear. We'll check this out. And that, to me, is, you know, the hubris, the counterproductivity, I think. It just the whole salacious nature of the media is rather disgusting to me, actually, if you really talk. I pretty much gave up on broadcast television about 5 years ago. So,
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I'm with you right there in terms of giving up on broadcast television. You know, I was talking about this with a friend recently. Every media outlet, maybe even this one, you know, as objective as we try and be, and I know that you guys try and be on the Paracast as well, Chris, you know, I think everybody has their own worldview, and it's impossible to an extent to remove yourself from that worldview and the way that an individual's worldview influences the information that's being put forth. And so you're never going to escape that, but the mainstream media seems to be really, 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 really filtered these days. And you know, if you watch, you know, the cable television, essentially you're going to get, you know, an individual or a group's perspective on the news and not really anything really close to the news itself.
And, exactly. And who cares about Lindsay Lohan's boob popping out or you know, somebody's Britney Spears' crotch being shown as she leaves a club in a disheveled state. Who cares about this stuff? And it becomes part of that 24, you know, hour news cycle, that hard cycle that, you know, every, you know, hour or so, you're going to see that same, you know, ridiculous paparazzi footage or, you know, the still photographs from the crime scene in Miami. I mean, give me a break. We have so many things that we should be dealing with now as a culture. We have just amazing financial issues that are not being properly addressed. I mean, just the whole subject of Fukushima.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I just literally 2 days ago ordered a Geiger counter so when I go into a sushi bar, I can make sure that I don't have irradiated raw fish.
Oh, wow.
On my sushi. So, you know, it's getting to a point where we have issues in our culture and in this world that are being trumped and totally overwhelmed by these weird salacious stories, whether it's some starlet or whether it's a cannibal. To me, no, I this stuff goes on all the time. It's the filtering process that you mentioned within the mainstream media that is force-feeding fear into the public. And, you know, that's why you got me on the show, right?
Oh, it is. It certainly is. And, you know, and I think that this kind of cult of personality that stems from media portrayal of these events probably is no better exemplified than in this story that the Daily Mail carried about this individual, Luca Magnotta, okay, who was arrested in Berlin after apparently not only brutalizing, but also killing, dismembering, and then cannibalizing his ex-boyfriend. This man was a homosexual adult film star, and he was believed to have fled from Canada to Paris on May 26th, but then was actually apprehended in Berlin in an internet cafe. This man had undergone fairly extensive plastic surgery to his face so that he had a very young, boyish kind of, I hate to even use this expression, but he looked a little like Michael Jackson, you know, with blonde short hair. And with this kind of, you know, asexual appearance, he was able to disguise himself, many people believe, as a woman and thereby evade capture for some time. This man had not only previously killed kittens on camera and posted these videos on film by suffocating them in a plastic bag, but had also threatened to do even worse. And sure enough, he apparently followed through with this, and he was captured in an internet cafe reading stories, news stories, about himself and about his apparent ability to evade capture. He's been branded the Canadian psycho because apparently this video that he had posted, and yes, that's what's so terrifying, he posted a video online depicting the brutal murder of this former lover of his. This individual...
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
it's... You're kidding me. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's... And it was set to the music from the theme, okay, the theme music to the film American Psycho with Christian Bale, and hence he was dubbed the Canadian Psycho. I think, again, we see that this is... It's almost like a negative feedback loop in which the media portrays this in a certain way, and this individual literally was kind of, you know, pardon the expression, but getting his jollies from seeing the portrayal in the media of this horrific act that he had actually carried out. It's really terrifying, and it does provide some rather disturbing commentary on our culture and society today.
Well, look at the story from 2008. Again, up in you know, dealing with Canadians for some reason, this guy Vince Lee attacked a guy sitting next to him on a Greyhound bus, and claimed he was like possessed by a Wendigo, as you mentioned at the top of me coming on here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these types of stories, I think, are, like I said before, you're going to see more and more of them. As the culture heats up, you're going to see more people snapping. And I think in this very, very fast-paced modern world, where it's very difficult for the average person to even keep up with their daily life, you start piling on all these obstacles in a person's life, and there are a lot of people that are in in the throes of snapping, basically. Uh-huh. I think, for lack of a better term,
or going
postal,
people
reach
maybe
a certain, you know, point of no return, and they snap. And to me, it's kind of morbidly fascinating that some people choose to snap in such a weird manner, and you have to wonder if maybe angel dust or, you know, bath salts or, you know, who knows what people are doing to get off out there on the street. But you have to wonder if there's also some sort of chemical element that's exacerbating these you know, personalities that are ready to snap. I don't know. It's just it's very bizarre. I'm an eternal optimist. I try to look at the positive sides, but when the media is force feeding us with all these fear-based, you know, negative images and stories, it's kind of hard not to scratch your head and wonder where we're going as a culture.
It really is scary. Now, you know, I think Brad Steiger used the expression "Wendigo psychosis" when interviewed this week about all this alleged zombie outbreak. And in relation to what would this appeared actually in the Huffington Post, and in relation to there being some sort of a unity between these instances of violent crime and cannibalism. And this expression,
I'm not sure if I'd go there. I know I really admire Brad, and of course, like you, I grew up reading his books. Mm-hmm. That may be a little overreaching, I think.
I agree.
I don't really think we're seeing something, you know, really spooky and dark and coordinated or that sort of thing. Boy, I sure hope we don't. That's not the case.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm the eternal optimist. I would like to, you know, somehow make it okay in my mind these things are happening by saying that they're isolated events, and the very thought that they could be connected to me is really that's not a place I want to go. Let's put it that way.
Well, I agree with you there, but you know, I would like to come back around, because in your book Stalking the Tricksters, you talked about the Wendigo phenomenon, and you mentioned this horrific murder that occurred a few years ago, the perpetrator being Vince Lee, this man who essentially attacked, murdered, and decapitated a man on a Greyhound bus that was headed through, what was it, British Columbia, part of Canada?
Yeah, I think they were in Alberta, I think, when it actually happened.
Okay, yeah.
You
talked about this. The first place I ever read about this, in fact, was in your book. And this was where I was introduced to this concept of there being a murderous spirit that could literally possess the souls of the living, in the sense of the native tradition of the Wendigo. Tell us a little bit about the Wendigo, and even if there isn't any kind of a link to these murders and these atrocious crimes that we've been seeing in the media today, I'm interested in that concept of the Wendigo and the spiritual phenomena underlying that.
Well, when I was writing Stalking the Tricksters, I was looking around the world for examples, cross-cultural examples of trickster-esque beings, phenomena, myths, legends, characters within, you know, cultural story. And Bigfoot never really entered into the discussion, but a very similar type being, which is pretty much from the southern Canada in the upper Midwest, Minnesota, Wisconsin, up into Canada. It's called the Wendigo, and it's a kind of Ojibwe, Anishinaabe, Inuit sort of legend of like these giant shamanic Bigfoot-style creatures that are really big. I mean, we're talking up to 30 feet tall in some instances. In some traditions, and these creatures are cannibalistic, and they are similar to werewolves, and they can pass along this affliction, which is a shape-shifting phenomenon, which a human is like a werewolf was bitten and becomes a Wendigo, actually shapeshifts into this creature in depending on the tradition for specific purposes. But it's almost an involuntary thing. In other words, it's not like a skinwalker where you know that you're training to become a skinwalker. This is more of a victimized scenario, like a vampire, werewolf type scenario. And it's very unique, I think. I have not encountered a mythical creature that can resemble a Wendigo anywhere around the world in this particular fashion. And Wendigos are very, very fast. They're able to swoop in, even though they're extremely large. They're able to swoop in almost like they're moving faster in time than we are. That's one element. There's some celebrated cases that go from the end of the 19th century into the 20th century where Wendigo hunters, these outdoorsmen that were hired by people to go after what were thought to be and suspected to be Wendigos within a community. Uh-huh. And there actually were a couple of very notable murder trials featuring a person that was, you know, tried for murder of a person, but that person had shapeshifted back from a Wendigo into human form, and therefore he was put on trial for murder. So there is a body of research out there that really is compelling to me as an investigator, as a researcher. There's enough information out there to show that there may be something to this. But whether an isolated kind of a pretty regional and localized phenomenon like this could be responsible for things going on in Florida or in Germany or wherever, it's kind of doubtful to me. Maybe you could equate the transformation into the energy it would take for a human being to do that to another human being, that impulse. You know, if you want to call it Wendigo psychosis, Brad, I mean, I can't think of any other term to replace it. So, you know, Wendigos are very interesting, and they're not well known among people that follow cryptozoology or the paranormal. And there's some pretty interesting stuff out there.
Yeah, and I know that Lauren Coleman has touched on the Wendigo mythos, the legend of this creature in Native American folklore as, you know, one manifestation of the ongoing presence of there being non-human, ape-like individuals, you know, beings of some sort out there in our midst or in, you know, in the remote wilds on the periphery of...
But you can't really equate them to Bigfoot. That's what is really puzzling in my mind as a researcher, trying to look for the commonalities, and there's a real disconnect. And one of the things that I've kind of suspected is that part of North America is very, very extreme. And, you know, if you were living, you know, in a teepee or a wigwam or some sort of, you know, very primitive structure, wearing moccasins with a howling wind at 30 below, cannibalism would be a real fear during the winter months. And, you know, I think that this legend may have somehow over the generations been fueled by a fear of cannibalism. And when cannibalism does occur, it's easier for the subculture to palm it off on some supernatural creature as opposed to the people that had to eat each other to survive. So, I mean, there's a lot of elements here, anthropological and sociological, that need to be addressed before we start to, you know, get real broad stroke with our terminology.
Very interesting interpretations. Chris, you know, you're always good for that, by the way. And I want to thank you so much for...
Thanks, man.
Thanks for coming on the program, you know, and talking about that. I don't want to keep you too much longer, but do tell us, you know, just a little bit about, you know, what's in the future for you. You're doing the Paracast these days, and of course, you know, hopefully there's some new book projects and things coming along. What's going on in your world?
Well, it's, you know, I wear too many hats.
I don't know how that goes.
Just had an incredible trip up to the Sapapu, one of the most sacred sites on the planet, and uncovered a bombshell news story, Micah, that we're going to be revealing here in the next week. All is not well at the place of emergence, and if that's where the southwestern natives are going to go to escape earth changes, boy, there's already high technology ahead of them. So it's a very interesting story that's developing right now.
Well, color me intrigued already. Your website and, of course, you know, where people can find out more about you and your work.
Right, it's OurStrangePlanet.com, and we have a brand new WordPress version of it going up tonight or tomorrow, so stay tuned. Also, theparacast.com, every Sunday night, like Micah and a handful of others out there, Tim Banal. There's a few broadcasters out there really trying to separate the signal from the noise, and Micah, man, I'm your biggest fan. I love your music. you just, I mean, you dazzle me, man. We need more people like you out there in the field, man.
Well, really. That's mutual, man. The feeling's mutual. You and Gene and so many others out there, you know, who really work hard at this. I couldn't appreciate guys like you more. So, Chris, you know, you always have a home here on the Grayling Report. Thank you for joining us tonight and talking about Wendigo psychosis and, of course, bringing a little bit of method and a little bit of understanding to this madness we're seeing in the news today.
Okay, man. My pleasure. Anytime.
All right. You take care of yourself, Chris. That is Christopher O'Brien of the Paracast. Of course, you know, you can follow him each week on the Paracast with Gene Steinberg. Fantastic podcast. And one we're proud to call Friends of the Grayling Report here on the program. Yes, indeed. When we come back, we're going to dig into this a little bit more. Did you know, again, I've mentioned that the Centers for Disease Control had actually at various times talked about the potential for a zombie apocalypse. We'll look at that. Maybe we'll look a little bit more in depth at this terrible circumstance with this, well, this adult entertainer who was captured in Berlin. And, of course, other strange news. It is the Grayling Report. I'm Micah Hanks. We'll be back right after this.
What can we learn from our ancient past? What is the mystery behind UFOs? Did aliens visit humankind in ancient times? Each of these tests the very boundaries of humankind's ability to reason, and all will be explored this year at the Paradigm Symposium 2012, October 18th through 21st in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Speakers will include Eric Von Daniken, author of Chariots of the Gods, George Norrie of Coast to Coast AM, as well as Giorgio Tsoukalos, Bill Burns, Philip Coppens, and many more. Tickets are selling fast, so reserve yours online today by visiting ParadigmSymposium.com. Reviewing our past and changing our future. For more information, visit ParadigmSymposium.com.
Welcome back to the program. Micah Hanks here. It is the Grayling Report. We're delving into a bit of the media madness we're seeing going on out there right now. This is, boy, I tell you, truly, truly disturbing stuff that we're seeing. You know, I've listed a number of these alleged, what many are calling cannibal or zombie attacks, but perhaps none of them to me are quite as disturbing as this story of this fugitive cannibal adult entertainment star, okay, who had undergone plastic surgery. He was arrested in Berlin in an internet cafe looking up news stories about himself. Talk about a cult of personality. This was Luca Magnotta, arrested after he was recognized in a Berlin cafe. Armed police carried out the raid. They say he surrendered without any struggle. He was accused of murdering and dismembering a student named Jun Lin, who he had apparently been involved in some sort of a romantic relationship with. He fled from Canada to Paris on May 26th before taking a night bus late one Friday evening to Berlin. He's even had plastic surgery, as I've mentioned a few times, to make him look, as he says, more like James Dean. But there are probably even more terrifying psychological undertones to this story than those that I've already mentioned. You know, Matt, during the break, you were talking about the relevance of the ice pick and some of the strange synchronicities that are underlying this story of this Luca Magnotta. Okay, tell us a little bit about this guy and some of the more bizarre parallels to film and fiction that are related to this curious incidence of apparently unwarranted violence and murderous behavior.
Well, you had brought up earlier that
The man had apparently filmed the actual murder, stabbing his quote-unquote lover with an ice pick, and had put it to the soundtrack, the score of the film American Psycho. Well, apparently, the murderer actually traveled from to Berlin from Paris, and during that travel, he was using a false name, and he used the false name Trammell. And that's spelled T-R-A-M-E-L-L. And apparently, this is a real big parallel between, if you recall, the 1992 film Basic Instinct with Sharon Stone, who plays Catherine Trammell, and she murders her lover with an ice pick.
Oh, wow.
Same way this man did.
Incredible. Incredible. You know, I tell you, it's really terrifying. And a lot of people have said this, too. You know, they've talked about how, for instance, let's say that we have, fear about a terrorist attack here in the United States. And then the talking heads go out there and say, well, what if the terrorists were to do this? Or if they wanted to kill a bunch of people, all they'd have to do was this. And people say, you know, you're just giving them ideas by going out there and talking about these kinds of things. Is there really a potential for influencing the minds of the mentally disturbed and those who would engage in murderous activities, the likes of which this individual, okay, this Luca Magnotta did this past week? Does the media and does film and fiction influence these individuals to engage in obscene murderous activity? Now, it's not just so simple as the actual murder taking place. This individual, this is fairly disturbing subject matter, and we like to warn people before we dive right into the middle of that. You know, we are conscious broadcasters here on the Graylian Report, and we don't want to make our listenership uneasy or unhappy, but we feel that, you know, in terms of understanding the underlying sociological and psychological circumstances here, that we do have a certain duty to talk about these kinds of things and to try and do so objectively and without sensationalizing the subject matter. I would say that, indeed, what we're dealing with here is not only worth talking about here, but in terms of understanding, if there is indeed some sort of a consistency or if there's any kind of a relevance to there being the sheer number of, you know, it's very difficult to even try and understand and explain. I think, very simply, I could just, you know, borrow Lauren Coleman's term that I've already mentioned, this copycat effect. Do these copycat crimes occur in the sense that one person says, okay, I'm going to do something heinous, or maybe they're under the influence of something, bath salts or whatever else, and they go out there and they commit a terrible crime, and then we see these copycat crimes that occur. Is there relevance to that in the sense that someone is knowingly perpetrating these kinds of similar crimes, which is a terrifying concept in itself, and thereby should we be warned and be aware and always vigilant and prepared in the event that there are other crazies out there who are literally just waiting for some excuse to do something obscene that has been going on in their mind? Or, like Chris had mentioned in the last segment, Chris O'Brien, our guest, could it be that these sorts of things really do happen all the time, and just at various times the media jumps onto these stories and they look for parallels, and these parallels that appear, okay, the seeming appearance of parallels actually stems more from the way that the media handles these kinds of things. In other words, do violent acts on par with what we're seeing in the media right now that have been likened to a zombie apocalypse, do these really happen all the time and we just don't hear about them as often? Or is it, you know, again, something that literally is apparently singular, and there is a rash of reports that are unique, and indeed this sort of thing does not happen, thank goodness, all the time, but we're hearing about all these right now, as though there were some sort of an underlying influence that was causing this sort of thing to occur more often and in a fairly localized period of time. I don't know. I don't have the answer, but it's pretty terrifying. It certainly is. And to think, especially like Chris had insinuated in the last segment, that maybe this kind of thing does happen all the time, and it's just whether or not the media chooses to comment on it and sensationalize it and blow it out of proportion and draw seeming parallels or not. You know, should we really be concerned? Does this kind of thing happen more often than we are aware? That probably is more unsettling than the idea of there actually being some kind of a connection between these sorts of reports.
Well, I'm not going to go so far as to say I feel it happens all the time, But, I mean, Chris brought it up earlier, right before the show, when we were talking about the fact that we did a kind of a segment like this last summer, at the beginning of last summer, when people, it just seemed, were absolutely going crazy.
Hey, that's a good point.
All in this short period of time.
Okay, okay, and again, just to be clear, I want to say that, you know, either one of two things I think is happening here. Either this sort of thing happens all the time and it's just underreported, or there is indeed something going on right now that is influencing these sorts of heinous, murderous crimes, and there is a reason why a number of them are apparently appearing all at once. Now, Chris, you pointed that out. About a year ago, we were sitting here on this program talking about a number of bizarre crimes. I think a lot of them had to do with nudity and violence and this sort of thing.
Yeah, just like really, like not just like, oh, wow, violent crime, but like really depraved, crazy, like insane violent crime, like stuff you can't even really make it up. It's so weird and crazy.
Well, like this Luca Magnotta guy.
You know, like people aren't just being killed anymore. They're being, you know, murdered, dismembered to main soundtracks character. Of awesome movies and then mailed out to different governmental officials. And then I'm going to go to...
And actually, yes, it's ridiculous. Something else. We haven't said that on the program yet. If you're just hearing this now, you know, Chris O'Brien was unaware of this story. The fugitive cannibal porn star, okay, who was arrested in Berlin. Yes, in addition to actually dismembering, okay, the corpse of his former lover, this man actually mailed body parts to government officials there in Canada, as I understand it.
And
folks, I apologize. I know this is very, very difficult to hear. But, you know,
well,
again...
And it makes you wonder, like, the level of insanity, because there's crazy, like, oh, flip out and kill someone. And then there's this level with this specific story in Canada where, you know, the kind of things that happen, you know, you don't just get plastic surgery. You have to plan this stuff out, like to package up parts and send them. That takes a lot of planning and at least a couple of weeks of pre-planning to the murder. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you're crazy. I feel like, you know, if you're gonna dismember someone, you are automatically should be considered insane. But it's calculated insanity, which really scares me. Random insanity, that's fine, that happens. But the cool, calculated, crazy that's going on is terrifying.
Yeah, it is. The cool, calculated, crazy. And every indication seems to point to the idea that this Luca Rocco Magnotta character planned this event out. He was 29 years old. You know, he's my age, this guy. Okay. And this character, you know, it's just a very strange and very sad story. Again, I mentioned that the individual had apparently appeared online in videos where he had, been hanging out with these two little kittens. And this is sick enough as it is, you know. The guy should have been put under the law for posting videos online where he did this, but he took these two little kittens that he was hanging out with, and he just put them in a plastic bag and filmed them suffocating. Oh, wow, that's so entertaining. Wow. Everybody wants to watch that. The whole world just really gets their jollies from watching cats suffocate in a bag. How entertaining, you sick freak. Thank you, Chris. Yes, Chris is reminding me, lower your volume level, Micah. Don't lose your... Because when I get mad...
Do I need to bring you another 32 ounces, Micah?
Yes, you probably do. I tell you, the thing is no, in truth, I'm a peaceful person. I like to... One of my mottos of many is be peaceful, but be serious. I don't advocate violence, because when you give in to that kind of crap, those kinds of... you know, base instincts. You know, this isn't fight or flight. It's just, let's just go out there and let's just screw some stuff up with reckless abandon and no regard to anyone or anything. Let's just go out there and just do not even what feels good. Let's just do it. That kind of mentality. I'm sorry. And when we allow ourselves to get violent, we are no better. We fall to the ranks of those who commit these kinds of crimes. And so, no, I'm not a violent person. But for fun, for the sake of fun, and for illustration, I say I'd like to take guys like Mr. Luca Magnotta here and throw him through a plate glass window. throw him through a plate glass window on the 32nd floor of a building in a major metropolitan area so that he has a nice long fall. No, I'm serious, you know, and it wasn't just the kittens, I'm sorry. But this guy warned officials, allegedly, that he was going to go out there and he was going to do something else. Oh, the pretty boy. Look at him. I'm looking at his picture right here. Pretty boy, huh? Pretty boy here is going to go out there and he's just going to kill somebody. Just for the fun. Just for the notoriety. Just for the notoriety. Yeah, I'm sure this person was pretty sick. I mean, then again, he was an adult star in a number of adult films. And he was killing kittens. Okay, now I'm just going to tell you something else, and Chris is just like going, oh God, don't say this, but no, the point I'm drawing here is that the day before he was killed, before he was sentenced to death, okay, Ted Bundy, do you remember this? Ted Bundy warned against the dangerous influence of violent pornography in our culture these days. And I can't help but wonder if this young man was not influenced. I don't say that in any way to excuse his behavior and his activities, but certainly we know that, again, this man was a you know, what was referred to, the you know, the headline here reads, fugitive cannibal porn star arrested. And he was also described apparently as a gay porn star who worked as a male escort using the name, quote-unquote, Angel, boy of all names to use, who had also undergone plastic surgery to make himself look more like James Dean. What I'm saying here is that there are levels of psychological disturbance that this individual not only maybe had been subjected to, but subjected himself to by virtue of his choices in life, his life choices, which led him ultimately to kill and dismember his former gay lover and then mail body parts to officials in Canada and then escape in drag, okay? He was disguised as a woman and he escapes to... First it was Paris, right? And then he goes to Berlin. My God. And like Chris said, not Chris Hayes, but Chris O'Brien, our guest tonight, in the last segment, you know, what is it that causes a man to, as one of the members of the investigative team investigating the murder, okay, as one of the members of the investigative team described the murder, what causes a man to, quote-unquote, tear the victim apart like a doll and film it and put it online and brag about it? And when he is captured, the man is sitting in an internet cafe in Berlin looking at stories about himself. You know, he's looking at stories about himself as though he were fascinated at the amount of attention he were getting for this horrific crime he created. Wow, your legacy, buddy, you're going to be remembered for all eternity as the guy who killed his ex-lover and dismembered his corpse and ran. And who ran. Wow, what a legacy. And people wonder why I talk about cosmic love on this program. There are so much better things that we could be remembered for. And fortunately, one of my own influences, Mr. Gandhi, you remember him? Probably best remembered for that statement, "Be the change that you want to see in society." If you are unsettled by the sorts of things that you see in culture and society and the news, the media, just like we rant about on this program, if you're unsettled by those things, just as I am, be that change that you want to see. If you don't like hearing about these sorts of things, change it. Change it because you have the power to change that. You don't have to give in to the disgusting sorts of things that we hear about constantly on the news. It really is troubling, but you know what? I'm thankful that with this program and with our listenership that we have an ability to change, that we have an ability to influence and to do so for the better. Again, people wonder why I talk about cosmic love on this program. I will continue to do so and do so proudly. And you can take that to the bank. Now, let's change gears here for just a minute because we're almost finished with this week's edition of the program. I do want to... say that we've had a lot going on lately here at Grayling International and, of course, at the offices of Intrepid Magazine. And my good friend Scotty Roberts has brought me a bunch of information. Things are progressing very well. You know, talking about being the change you want to see in society, talking about changing people, and as I've said a few times myself, reviewing our past and changing our future, maybe for the better. Well, that's the whole aim of the Paradigm Symposium this year, and that's why we've got Scotty Roberts joining us right now on the Grayling Report to talk just for a minute about that. Scotty, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Well, I'm great, and it's always good to have you on the program. You know, I've been ranting for the last 15 minutes about this Canadian cannibal and about the sick stuff that we've been seeing in the news. And frankly, I'm so sick of all this sickness that I just wanted to change gears and talk to someone who is a bright, shining beacon of illumination and positivity in not just my life, but all the readers.
That guy wasn't available, so you called me.
Close enough. No, I tell you, Scotty.
Well, he'll do.
You will do. You will do. You know, I'm so thrilled because I'd mentioned to our listenership that next week we're going to have a very special guest here on the Grayling Report. And, of course, you know, we are, because, you know, you're going to be doing this interview with me. You line this thing up, in fact. You know, Scotty, there's been a lot going on with Paradigm Symposium lately. Give us an update, if you will.
A little update. You want me to talk about who our special guest is going to be?
I don't know. I should ask my producer. Producer, are we allowed? Are we given jurisdiction to talk about that now, or do we have to keep it a secret?
Save that.
Well, I believe it might be okay. Let's drop some hints. Some people have already figured it out based on Micah's talking about Prometheus. But you know, you drop some hints. Let's not give it away completely.
Let's put it this way. He is probably, if you want to think of the most iconic character in the early ancient astronaut field, which has evolved into the ancient alien field and is still an icon today. Or has become the icon that he is today. This is the guest we're having. Getting him feels like a bit of a coup in a way.
Who could this be?
Well, I was thinking more along the lines of a hint like the most famous blue sport coat ever.
the most famous, and you know, what do you want to bet? It's one of two things. He's either got a closet full of those babies, or he's got the same one he's had on since 1984.
Who could you possibly be talking about?
It's part of his body now. It's not even a jacket anymore. It's his skin.
He has assimilated.
There you go. It's his persona, I think. You know, some guys wear, Indiana Jones had his fedora, you know, and the whip. And Spock has his ears. This guy has
yes,
his
because
blue
Spock wore his ears, Scotty.
And Micah has his feet.
And I have my, yes, I know, I have.
No, Micah has his girl flared leg pants.
These aren't flared. These are,
well, not like, these ones.
There's a special girl. Okay.
Chris, I have it on good authority. Yesterday, Micah was wearing a pair of slacks.
No.
I was wearing slacks yesterday.
I have it on good authority that yesterday Micah wasn't wearing much of anything.
Oh, really? Who told you that? My fashion consultant?
I have cameras.
Oh, well, that's even more disconcerting. Oh. Who do you work for, Mr. Hayes? I'm kidding.
Yeah. What do the white vans do when they pick up those pictures of you naked running around your house? Like, oh.
How does everybody know about that? What's going on here?
It's not like you make a secret out of it, man.
Well, I mean, you can see it from space. Come on.
What space? Well, you know, speaking of Von Daniken's blue coat, I think that Scotty and I have picked out our...
Micah, you're fired. Okay, for everyone out there, we are now looking for a new host for the Grayling Report.
There it is. It's all out there. It's true. Yes, indeed. Yes, we've been in touch with his people. His people are going to talk to our people next week, apparently. Yes, Eric Von Daniken will join us on the Grayling Report. Well, come on. I mean, like you didn't know.
Oh, but you didn't have to give it away like that.
Nobody knew. Nobody
Someone
knew.
Else could have a famous blue raincoat.
Nobody. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yes, they could.
Micah, you're slipping. I think you're going through Pon Farr or something.
Something's going on like that. But, you know, I'm so glad that, Scotty, you and I at least have our costumes for the Paradigm Symposium picked out. And
we
you know,
do indeed.
They're going to be, Scotty and I are going to be Kirk and Spock, okay? Oh, boy, here I go. Never mind, I got to stop.
He's got a picture in his mind of this, that he was on the video chat with my wife last night, just giddy as hell over this idea.
It's funny.
And it's just a notion, you know, we're probably going to wear suits and ties and look really slick and professional, but I said, you know, maybe, Michael, we ought to come out and something to just surprise everybody. And and he said, I've got the perfect picture in my mind.
Yeah, and complete with the pointed ears. I'm Spock, of course. You
well,
know.
Just make sure you've got a red shirt prepared for Matt.
Yes, Matt, I'm sorry, the guy with the red shirt.
Oh, you can follow us with the red shirt and a phaser. just looking out. You'll be our security team.
Well, you know what's funny is I might be the science advisor, but Scotty's got the phasers. I've seen them. Okay, this guy's got the vintage phasers.
Are they set to stun or kill?
You can change the setting, of course.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Let's make sure they're all set to kill.
I've got a replica phaser from the original The Cage episode with Jeffrey Hunter as Captain Pike. The little pistol with the round cylinder on the end that you turn it and it clicks, click, 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 click.
Yeah,
I got that one too.
Yeah, this is one of those Trekkie conventions, apparently. Paradigm Symposium, Scotty. You know, I understand that the first block of hotel rooms allotted for guests staying there at the DoubleTree Hilton have already sold out. We've had to put an extension on that. That's how quickly tickets are selling to this thing right now.
That's actually the second extension we've gotten put on now, because we had the original block, then they put another extension on there. Those have sold out. And they just yesterday added another block at the discounted rate. So if anybody's tried to make reservations in the last week, so actually somebody contacted me by email and said that the reservation desk said that they were out of that discounted rate. So we've got that added in now.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what. Well, for other folks out there who are interested in contacting you directly, let's say, because, you know, people, we've already told them they can contact us via www.paradigmsymposium.com. But if they have a question and they want to call you, can they do that?
Absolutely. Call this number, 651-468-8115. You call that number, you'll get me personally. If you've got a question about tickets, you want a little more information, if you feel like you're not getting enough off of the website, which is rife with information, but if you want to talk about it, give me a call. If you've got groups that you want to bring, we do offer a group rate. If you buy 7 tickets or more in one package, we will offer you a nice discount.
That's fantastic.
And, we also have just added in the last few weeks, we added a discount for active military. Now, this is not veterans. If we offered a discount to veterans, I don't think we'd sell a single ticket. That's almost not sell a single ticket at full price. So for veterans, though, we have offered a sizable discount. And if you go to ParadigmSymposium.com and you click on the tickets, you will see options. If you are active military, you can show your ID when you come to the registration table to pick up your tickets, but you have to show that you are active military and have an active ID. And when you present that, your sizable discount for active military will apply. And that's kind of our thank you to all of our fighting men and women out there.
That's what we need right there. And I'll tell you, that's exciting news, and it sounds like I'm not the only one that's excited. Somebody there in the background, I think, is pretty excited tonight, too.
You know, as you know, I office in my home. I don't sit at an office somewhere high atop the tower somewhere.
Or in a bunker underground like we do.
This. I'm at my home, and Grandma is over with her dog, and my children are all running around in the yard here with her and my wife and their friends, so... That's all the noise you hear. And every now and then you may hear a cackling young child come and worship me at my feet, which they tend to do while I'm on the phone.
Well, Scotty, you know, it's hard for anyone probably who hears you on the radio not to want to fall and worship you at your feet. Scotty Roberts, ladies and gentlemen, of course, he's the publisher of Intrepid Magazine, and he's my good friend who's going to be co-hosting the Paradigm Symposium with me at Minneapolis, Minnesota this October. Scotty, I can't wait, man. It's going to be fantastic. And in fact, I'm going to see you next week in Sacramento too, right?
Yes, you and I are two of the speakers at the Sacramento UFO Summit. And this is being put on by Anthony F. Sanchez, the author of UFO Highway, and a couple of other books he's got coming out. And his lineup is pretty impressive, too. Just go over to SACUFOCON, SACUFOCON. .com, and you'll see the lineup there.
Sounds very good.
Next weekend.
That is next weekend, and in fact, I think I'm going to be spending a lot of time in California next week.
So I hear.
Yeah, yeah. More on that later, though. Scotty, thanks always for joining us on the Grayling Report. Buddy, I'll be talking to you soon.
Micah, thanks for having me. Chris, see you later, man. Keep him in line, will you?
I'll do my best. Matt, could you keep him in line, please? Would you just do the show?
Oh, just everyone just live long and prosper.
That's right. Good night, Scotty. Thank you again so much. Ladies and gentlemen, my friends! Oh, and countrymen out there, that wraps up another edition of the Grey Alien Report. On behalf of what? Chris, what are you doing waving your arms over there? You're crazy, man.
I'm waving my hands in the air like I just don't
As long as he doesn't try and cannibalize Matt here. Oh, well. Anyway, on behalf of all of us here at Grey Alien International, Chris Hayes, Matt Oakley, John Anderson, Dick Oakley, and of course, yours truly, Micah Hanks, the Mouth of the South. This is the Grey Alien Report. Until next time, my dear friends, we'll talk to you soon. And of course, stay strange.